one of the challenges on that correlation between hearing loss and dementia and making sure that we get good interventions is the absence of data. So we have deliberately built EarGym to be something that's enjoyable and entertaining so that we can collect the journey of hearing loss, hearing health and cognition over time so that we can contribute to that research.
Welcome to Tech Talks, hosted by myself, David Savage, and powered by Nash Squared. Our guest on today's show is the founder and CEO of EarGym, Amanda Philpott. And joining me for today's show, I've got Akish. How are you?
Hello. I'm very well, thank you. We've not recorded in person for a while.
We haven't, but here we are. Quite late on in the day. We won't say which day because I'd like listeners to think that we're recording this
fresh.
Yeah.
Off the press.
I've got to be honest, I'm doing a little bit of travelling this week. So it's a couple of days in advance of where it should be.
In the same week.
Yeah. Akish, when you go to the pub, do you struggle to listen, or sorry, do you struggle to have a conversation with someone if they're stood next to you, if it's loud?
Yes.
Yes.
Well, it's got various factors.
Yeah.
Depends how much I've had to drink. you know, at the start of the evening, I'm probably not struggling, but towards the end of it, yes, maybe. We've all found ourselves when we're at a bar or a pub, even sometimes restaurants, like, you know, where sometimes you're sat there, but you can't hear the person opposite you because, you know, it's too loud, or I'm sure plenty of listeners will be guilty of this. Sometimes one of your ears are eavesdropping into another conversation that may be also happening in close proximity that, you know, is maybe a bit more juicier about, you know, people's personal lives. Anyway, not that I like to eavesdrop, but...
I sometimes struggle. I will be honest, if we're in a loud environment and someone's talking, I really have to lean in, otherwise I struggle. And I tend to think my hearing's quite good. So it's reassuring to hear that other people struggle. And look, the reason why I'm asking this is that the 3rd of March is World Hearing Day.
Is it?
It is. And as you're about to hear from our interview today with EarGym, there is a direct correlation between hearing loss and dementia.
Wow.
Which is slightly worrying, because a lot of us listen to our music probably louder than we should.
I'm guilty of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, I've got... an Apple Watch, which starts to, you know, vibrate if my if my headphones are a bit loud, you know, on the train home or whatever, and it tells you to, you know, turn the volume down for safety and all that stuff.
I'll be honest, since recording this conversation with Amanda, I have actively turned the volume down.
Have you actually?
That's how much of an impact.
Because don't they say you have to listen between, like, 50 to 70% of the volume, not 100?
Have a listen to this and see if it changes your habits. Today I'm joined by Amanda Philpott. Amanda, you're the CEO and co-founder of EarGym. How are you today?
I'm very well, thank you, Dave. Very pleased to be talking to you.
Look, tell us a little bit about EarGym and your story to finding yourself at EarGym, because you've got a career that does take in quite a lot of health and healthcare to get you to this point. So I think it'd be really good to kind of set some context and explain what you're up to, but also how you've got here.
Certainly, yeah. Thanks, Dave. So EarGym is a step-by-step hearing care platform, and we have built the platform in order to be able to help people to look after their hearing before they need hearing aids. And the reason that we've set up EarGym is because we discovered the information about the correlation between hearing loss, social isolation, mild cognitive impairment, and dementia. In fact, hearing loss is the biggest amenable factor in dementia at 8% of all dementias. And the reason I'm motivated to address that is because I'm a population health specialist. I came to EarGym through the Zinc Accelerator after a nearly 30-year career in the NHS. So I started in the NHS back in 1991. I went through a whole fantastic series of jobs in operational management and in commissioning, in hospitals, in primary care, and all over the place, really. And where I found myself was the NHS is a really difficult, in a difficult place because of the financial situation and the pressures on the system. And I realised that my first love is in prevention of ill health and in promotion of well-being. So I thought I would have a go from a different perspective, and decided when I left the NHS in 2019, I was fortunate to be selected for an accelerator, and decided to have a go at a completely new way of addressing health and well-being through setting up a digital health startup.
And look, a digital health startup, you said there you were involved in a very successful long career when it came to the operational side. You're not a clinician, but I assume you have spoken to and have worked with many clinicians as well to make sure that this is grounded in medical science as well.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, you can't. I mean, yeah, the health service needs really good management, but obviously it operates with really good, 147, I think, different professions. It takes a whole team to make sure that patients get really good care, but clearly frontline clinicians are absolutely critical. And I have a huge respect for making sure that we bring all of the greatest minds together. So we have research and clinical audiologists within the team. We have hearing experts in our board of advisors. In fact, we have games experts, audio experts, behavioural insights experts to make sure that we are developing the best product possible. And actually, whilst it's really important to have professional experts, of course, what it's also critical to do is have patient experts or expert. Mm. You know, we have user-led design panel, and we have had for the last 2 years. And we make sure that within that panel, we have people not only with good hearing, but with mild and moderate hearing loss, severe hearing loss, and with dementia. So we get that full range of perspectives to shape our product development.
Let's unpack this a little bit, because people might kind of have heard you speaking there and go, hang on, 8% dementia, what was that? And kind of it all kind of came quite rapid fire, and it's, I think it does need unpacking. And I will also add some context that there is stigma around hearing aids as they exist, and they're obviously fantastic bits of kit. But my father-in-law, for one, he has terrible hearing, and he doesn't like wearing a hearing aid because he says it makes him look old. And I imagine, unfortunately, that's probably quite a common thing for people to say. They don't like the idea that somehow it's taking away an aspect or an independence aspect of their character, right?
Yeah, that's a really important point, Dave. It's the average age of a first-time wearer of hearing aids is 75. And that's because people are really frightened of looking frail, and hearing aids are perceived to be pretty much the biggest thing that indicates that somebody is frail. And so it's a perception issue rather than a reality. Because, of course, if you're leaning into a conversation and you're staring really hard, or you're saying what and pardon all the time and missing everything, actually that can be as frustrating. But the look of frailty, the perceived association with hearing aids is really significant. And the other point, of course, is the cost. So unless you're eligible for free hearing aids on the NHS, which can be, it's region specific, but it relates to your age or the level of your hearing loss, then it can cost you on average £2,500 a pair, which is quite a barrier for a lot of people to make that decision. So your father-in-law is not unusual.
And the 8%, the link to dementia, what is the correlation? Because we have spoken previously, the World Health Organization, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but you talked about it being 430 million people globally who have a disabling level of hearing loss, and even mild hearing loss can increase the risk of dementia, right?
Yeah, one of the things that motivated me is the size and scale of the problem. And even as a population health specialist, I did not know, firstly, about the size and scale of hearing loss and the massive impact on our economy as well as our well-being. But I certainly hadn't recognised the correlation with dementia. So there was the Lancet Commission on Dementia back in 2017, and it's been updated in more recently. And within that commission, led by Jill Livingston, there were several papers that brought together the work on the correlation between hearing loss and dementia. Mm-hmm. And the correlation is hearing loss, social isolation, so that withdrawal when we start to become uncomfortable in social situations where it's too noisy, where we can't hear clearly, and the mental strain of listening is too great. So social isolation, correlation with mild cognitive impairment, and then the correlation with dementia. So mild cognitive impairment is a marker for dementia. What is interesting, of course, though, is because we very rarely test our hearing. So one in two of us will check our eyesight or our teeth every year, but only one in 20 of us will check our hearing. And 40% of people aged over 50 have never had a hearing check. And so we don't collect any data. So one of the challenges on that correlation between hearing loss and dementia and making sure that we get good interventions is the absence of data. So we have deliberately built EarGym to be something that's enjoyable and entertaining so that we can collect the journey of hearing loss, hearing health and cognition over time so that we can contribute to that research. So, sorry, the reason I said that is because the correlation is absolute, but the direction of cause and the way in which the relationship works is something that needs more investigation.
And when we talk about impact on the economy, this might be a really stupid question, but that's the one bit where I'm like, hang on a minute. So because the average age of the first time wearer for a hearing aid is 75.
Yeah.
But that doesn't, because that's obviously well beyond the retirement age. So just that link, explain that so I understand that better, because I'm probably oversimplifying it, but I assume people are obviously losing their hearing, obviously because they're not testing it a long time before. But how does that all work?
So if you think about in the UK, around 40% of people aged over 50, and certainly 70% of people aged over 70 will have some level of hearing loss. Mm-hmm. So it's not that they haven't got hearing loss. The reason that they wait until they're 75 is not because they're not experiencing hearing loss, it's because they're really trying to avoid wearing hearing aids. So whether or not we know it, one in two of us at my age in my 50s are likely to be experiencing some form of hearing loss. And when it comes to those aged over 60, you're talking about one in four of us will have a disabling level of hearing loss. Now, what that means is it's really life impacting. So when I talk about the economic impact, I wear hearing aids, I have moderate hearing loss. But if I had retired 7 to 9 years earlier than I would do at normal pensionable age, I would lose about half of my pension. And those are the stats for people with hearing loss, is we retire 7 to 9 years earlier. And that means that the businesses lose all of that wisdom and experience and that workforce, but also it means that we are affected in terms of our sense of self, our productive lives, and our financial well-being. So that the economic cost is extraordinary. It's calculated to be $25 billion a year in lost productivity and early retirement in the UK alone, and wow, $980 billion globally every year. And again, something we didn't know until we looked into the stats.
So let's talk about the product. We'll get onto how you test and the scores, but very quick question. If you have hearing loss, is it possible to reverse it? And this was a question I got asked yesterday. I went, I don't know. You can't reverse it, right? You can just delay or improve. I don't want to say improve. I just interesting to know what you can do.
So let's take our hearing back to two parts. So if you think about your sensory neural hearing as your hardware and your auditory processing as your software. So the mechanism that takes in sound is the ear, and you go into the middle ear and into the inner ear. And in the inner ear, you have a cochlea. And in the cochlea, there are these 18,000 or so hair cells. And those hair cells are taking the sound and translating it into electrical signals. And it's those hair cells that decline with wear and tear and the impact of noise and aging. And right, the hair cells on the outer side edge of the cochlea are the ones that take in the high frequencies. So we start to lose the beginning and end of words. We lose the sibilance that's sounds that are probably quite annoying that I've just gone and done that through a microphone. But that means that it starts to sound like people are mumbling, and that's when it's hard to hear the television or it's hard to focus on one person in front of you when there's a noisy background. So that's the sensory neural aspect, and that's where your hearing aids, the tech in hearing aids is superb these days, generally speaking, and that can really help that. But then you need to apply meaning to sound. And so your auditory cortex, your auditory processing, and if I might use the example of early man in the forest, and you've got to, your hearing skills, if you like, you've got to detect a sound. Can you hear something in the woods around you? And then when you've detected it, where is it coming from? So localization. And then you've got to apply meaning. You know, you've got to be able to discriminate that it's a sound that you want to pay attention to. And when you apply meaning to it, is it the bear that is coming to eat you, or is it the wild boar that you can eat? You know, it's the auditory processing, it's the applying meaning to sound that is the software. So in answer to your question, can you improve it? At this point, humans cannot regenerate their hair cells. The sensory neural aspect, you cannot recover your hair cells at this point, although there's a lot of research work going on to try to create that opportunity in the near future. But what you can do is practice listening. And the evidence from scientists in lab-based research is that if you practice listening, the auditory processing side, you can improve your ability to apply meaning. You can improve your overall hearing capacity by up to 25%. So that's practicing listening, speech and noise. So speech against speech. And so what we have been building is games that enable you to practice listening.
Right.
And with the opportunity to improve by up to 25%. And at this point, in our early stage startup, our early research, and it's small, but it's significant research, is showing a 20% improvement opportunity.
And just as a really off-piste and perhaps stupid question, if you can improve the software but the hardware declines, why are we persevering, I suppose, with traditional hearing aids? Why not bone conduction, or looking at something that cuts out the need for the hairs entirely? Because if you've got bone conduction or cochlear style devices, would that not, I suppose, circumnavigate that issue? Or is that really
stupid? I mean no, it's not a stupid question. It's actually a much more complex question, and I'm not an audiologist, so I'll only give a layperson's interpretation. Okay. But those devices are really good for people with profound hearing loss, because they find a route through to your ability to process sound by going around structural problems, in effect. And so it's almost a rerouting of the ability to take sound to your auditory processing. So bone conduction is literally taking the vibrations through your bones instead of through the timbre and the hair cells and all those things. So what you lose is a bit of finesse, if you like. You lose the subtlety of the full range of frequencies. So
sure,
they are phenomenally good tech for people with really significant hearing loss, but far too sledgehammer to crack a nut for people with declining hearing loss with age and noise related hearing loss.
I might ask a follow-up question later in this interview, very quickly, when we talk about younger people and headphones then. But very quickly, how does it work? How does it work? Because I have done it. I have done the two initial tests on EarGym. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy, I think, to report I am turning 40 this year. I did two ear age tests, which you can explain how that works better than I can. But it came out as 40 and 39 across the two mm-hmm. tests. So my age, which I suppose it could be a lot worse. And then I did the hearing loss check, which I came out as 77 out of 100. And 75, I think, is on the cusp of hearing loss detected, but no hearing loss detected, which was slightly comforting, although at the lower end of that green scale. How do those tests work?
Okay, so what we learned in our early user conversations about hearing loss and why people don't address their hearing is that people are not only frightened of frailty, but they don't want to take the time to go and see an audiologist and have a pure tone audiometry assessment and what have you. So we do the earage check is a frequency slider. It takes about 30 seconds. 300,000 people have done our earage check so far. So we know that there's a huge amount of interest. And interestingly, about 70% of those people are under 30. So I'll bring that back to your conversation about headphones in a minute, because that's really
I'll just interject as well. If you're listening, these two tests are free on the app. Easy to check these things. Sorry, carry on.
So the frequency slide is, because we use different headphones and different tech to listen to it, then we wouldn't call it reliable or valid. But what it is an awareness raiser, because as we age, we tend to lose the higher frequencies. And so it gives you an indication of whether or not your hearing is about where we would expect it to be for your age, or better or worse. So if I'm not wearing my hearing aids, I'm 56, my hearing aid comes out about 83. But with my hearing aids, it comes out around where I am, you know, a bit better actually in my early 50s. But that is just an indicator of whether or not you're in the ballpark of where you would expect it to be. But the digital triplets test, which you've done the hearing check, which is 27 sets of numbers in noise, 27 sets of three numbers, that's a valid, reliable test that I can't think of the word, but it's an important test that is the same as the World Health Organization uses, and a number of other entities, because it gives you a proper indication of whether or not your hearing is in the normal range, or there's possible hearing loss detected, or hearing loss detected. And with EarGym, when you take it, we give you that outcome. And then, of course, if it says possible or definite hearing loss detected, then we advise you and guide you on how to access further support and you know, proper professional face-to-face support.
And within the app, that's where it then suggests, look, if you want to sign up and I suppose access those games, those solutions or exercises to try and help improve the software, that kind of comes to the fore.
Yeah. So what I would say with your hearing, it sounds like it's really in a good place. But you are 40 and it's saying you've got the hearing at the age of a 40-year-old, roughly speaking, which doesn't mean you've got perfect hearing. It means you're on a normal trajectory.
I do struggle in pubs and clubs and bars when it's really noisy. I struggle to hear conversation. You know, it's not always easy. So, and some of those triplets of numbers, I struggle to hear. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you will struggle to hear some of those triplets because it's trying to find where your hearing is. So sometimes it will go around and about to find your hearing. It will make it harder and easier in order to find your level. In bars you will struggle because you've got so much competing sound, and because those higher frequencies are necessary for us to hear the beginning and end of words. And so it becomes and the cognitive effort, the listening effort that is required to both seek to hear that sound, the concentration to hear what you want to hear, the target conversation, and then apply meaning to it, is significantly more if you've got a reduced sensory neural capacity.
Yeah. I mentioned about younger people and headphones. Let me get this right. You talked about, again, prior to us hitting record, is it 12 to 35-year-olds headphones using them at unsafe levels of listening, and that the younger generation are wrecking, without really realising, I'd imagine, but wrecking their hearing?
Yeah, absolutely. And so just take the World Health Organization numbers at the minute. We've already talked about 430 million adults with a disabling level of hearing loss, and then there's another billion adults with a mild hearing loss. The projection is 2.5 billion people affected by hearing loss by 2050, so in 25 years' time. But in addition to those numbers, so those are huge numbers in themselves, but in addition, there's 1.1 billion younger people aged 12 to 35 who are at risk because of unsafe listening. And predominantly, that's going to be the way in which we use our headphones. So headphone usage is pretty much ubiquitous, isn't it, in our lives, in terms of the freedom and the opportunity of our smartphones to listen to the music that we want, or any other audio that we want as we go about our daily lives, cutting people out, commuting, sitting in our office space. So it changes the definition of a noisy workplace as well. It's not just a construction site, it's also an office where we've got our headphones on to cut other people out. We might be channeling in sounds without, and there's a couple of points of risk. One is the volume in the first place, and secondly is the lack of breaks. And it's a bit like walking across a lawn. If you constantly walk the same path, you wear out the grass. if you constantly batter your hair cells with sound, you wear out your hair cells. Mm. So you have to go, I mean, the good rule is 60-60. 60% volume, no more, for 60 minutes and take a proper break. Give your ears a rest.
The question I was going to ask about bone conduction then, and what would your advice be? Because actually, I run a lot. I run 3-4 times a week, and I have buds that are noise cancelling. I sometimes turn them up quite a lot, but I have also used bone conduction headphones when I'm running because of the fact I live in a country setting. The country roads can be somewhat blind in their corners, and sometimes I've gone, actually probably quite a good idea to be able to hear what's around me, so they don't block your ears, and you've got the kind of, they sit on your cheeks and you can hear through the bones in your cheeks. Would actually adopting perhaps tech like that, where it's maybe not as perfect sound but actually is potentially a little less damaging, a good idea? Or is it just a case of, you know, don't worry too much, you don't need to go out and buy new headphones, it's just about reducing the sound?
Well, logically, bone conduction doesn't, it sends the sound through your bones. You know, it is a safer way of listening. But like you said, you lose some of the richness of the entire width of frequencies. But yeah, you know, they're a good thing. I think they might annoy people around you a bit more, but they're good. And noise cancelling is always a good idea, because what it enables you to do is, instead of having the sound that you want to listen to at a volume that takes it over the sound around you, if you've got noise cancelling, you can take your target sound volume down. So we always recommend noise cancelling.
Ah, so good noise cancelling headphones that then you can turn down, they are a good thing.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Okay, that is good advice. Right, okay, yeah. Okay. Good. Because I do wear headphones. I do like channeling in. Like probably many people. I have a penchant for quite loud music, so.
Yeah, like you though, if I'm out running or cycling or whatever, I would wear bone conduction. I think it's safer. You need your ears. You know, one of the things, there's the Amsterdam Inventory, which has been around. Professor Sophia Kramer created it back with the team in 1993. And it asks about how your hearing affects your life. And it's a really credible, reliable set of questions, scientific questions. But some of her questions are all about, can you hear the direction of traffic? Can you differentiate between a bus and a car? And so if you're wearing headphones that stop you from those sort of things out there in the street, there's an implication. From the test, it's an implication of, is your hearing working? But it's a safety thing. I think it's worth thinking carefully about whether or not you can hear when you need your ears.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, this has been fascinating. All I can say as well is, of course, would you class yourself as a startup, as a scale-up?
We're a startup. We're exploring the use of binaural audio for realistic audio training. We're exploring how to use AI so that we can do best personalization of training programs. And we are sort of looking at, we're using our patent pending adaptive algorithm to adjust effectiveness and progress. So we're at an early stage of, although we've been in existence for over 3 years now, we are working out the best way to reach the widest possible part of the population to help our hearing health.
Well, look, I'd hazard a bet that the vast majority of people are listening to this on headphones. So why not download Ear Gym? As I've said, it's free to do the two tests. So pure curiosity, why not? And then it might be the case that you decide that actually trying to improve your software might not be a bad idea. But thank you very much
fantastic.
For your time.
Thanks, Dave. And we welcome any feedback from anybody. We'd really value it. Thanks. Thanks ever so much for your time.
Yeah, genuinely, after listening to Amanda and hearing about the impact that this could have and what it might mean for your cognitive abilities as you age, I have changed my listening habits. The app, I did try it. Mm-hmm. You can download it and do some tests for free before subscribing.
Okay.
And it will measure your hearing. The fact that although your hardware, effectively, and your ears, as Amanda describes it, goes, your software can be honed is something that's, it was reassuring, because my hearing has not degraded, but I am 40 this year, and apparently 40 is the age when your hearing begins to go downhill.
Wow. Just as well you don't listen to your music that loud then.
Not anymore. I used to when I was running.
Yeah. And your travel, to be honest.
Well, when you're on the tube, I'll say one thing about London. Yeah. Like, when you're on the tube, you have to turn your music up quite loud to hear it over the bloody train sometimes.
Yeah, and the extra sort of noise and stuff. But also, with noise cancelling, this is what I was just thinking, with noise cancelling, it makes the sound a lot purer and a lot crisper. And therefore, with noise cancellation and turning it all the way up, I mean, you're probably...
Yeah, but as Amanda says in the interview, noise cancelling is good because then you don't have to have it as loud.
That's, yeah, true.
So noise cancelling, because I thought noise cancelling, as you can hear when I'm interviewing, I thought noise cancelling, as I led into that question, would be a bad thing, and she goes to say it's a good thing because then it allows you to not have it competing with other sounds.
Yeah, that's true. Are you a noise cancelling guy, or...?
Well, my running headphones are, yes.
Really? That's not safe, you know?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I should let some sounds in.
Correct.
Yes, so I don't get hit by a car.
Yeah, see, and I'm the driver that, you know, often gets annoyed because people, you know, can't hear you coming in and then they'll just run in front of you.
I run into traffic.
Yeah, okay, but you do also run down some country roads where there's normally not traffic.
Yeah, to be fair, I take my earphones out when I'm coming up to blind bends.
Okay.
Well, to make sure I'm listening.
Yeah.
Because
I
know that that's stupid.
Yeah, there we go. Mm. But also, I'm not the noise cancellation type because I feel like my head feels really weird. It feels like you're in some sort of a vacuum.
Yeah.
Which effectively it is, really. But I get really, I don't know what it is, like sick or, you know, a bit like my head starts to spin a bit. So that's why I kind of like the... Basically, I'm the subject for this interview whereby I let the outside noise come in because I feel comfortable, but then I max all the volume all the way up. So,
Okay, so lessons from today. We've learned about how Akish listens and we also know that he likes eavesdropping on conversations. So, if he's sat near Akish in a restaurant...
Shut up.
look, I'm travelling this week. It's the first of Nash Squared's 25th anniversary digital leadership events on Thursday night in Glasgow. If you're interested, if you haven't yet had a look at the DLR, we'll very quickly tell you a little bit of data from it. Last year, we predicted that there would be more caution with spend on technology and its people, okay? And as we enter 2023, it would seem that a day wouldn't pass basically without another announcement of workforce reductions, headcount freezes from some of the biggest names in tech. The last global recession bit hard in 2009, which we know, when tech budget increase expectations languished at 25%. And it's worth reiterating that levels are nowhere near that bad right now. Our survey says, I feel like I'm on Family Fortunes. Our survey says...
I like it, Dave.
that it's standing at 45%. So digital leaders are citing a correction following an overinvestment during COVID. And I think that's really interesting because we are talking about the fact that this is a correction rather than a... real hard bite. When you compare the 2009 figures, 25% versus 45%, it shows that actually investment in tech isn't quite as dire as you might think.
No, but I would also say that we could be considered as prophecy givers because whatever we said in our survey last year has come into fruition.
I want to play Family Feud now. Steve, what's his face?
Steve Harvey?
Yes.
Steve Harvey.
In Georgia.
Yeah. Neither of us are wearing flashy three-piece suits, though, so that's not happening. But what I guess the point I'm trying to make is, yes, you know, because we've got so many industry-leading experts and those that are actually... you know, CIOs, CTOs, right at that sort of, summit of these organisations that are not only in charge of people, but also finances and budgets.
Yeah.
We're in a good stead. And if you are in the city of Glasgow, come find Dave.
Thursday night. Well, this is going out on Friday, so...
Oh, God.
It will have happened, but we've got loads
we
more
have
events
a road
happening.
Show in the UK, correct?
I'm off to Dusseldorf next month.
Well, there
DLR
we go.
Event, so.
And make sure you shout at Dave because he won't have his volume turned all the way up in his headphones so you can hear you.
Very true.
There we go.
Tech Talks is hosted and edited by David Savage. It is produced by Nash Squared. And we have special thanks to Lemzy for supplying music to this show.